Welcome to the Space Show, Angelo.
Thank you, Andrew. Great to be here.
I believe you've been over to see the shuttle launch.
I certainly have. I guess myself, Peter Alwood, and Michael Abdillah, all three of us are association members for some time. Earlier this year, there was a thought that perhaps as the shuttles were coming to an end, we should go and do something, and surprise, surprise, it all sort of gelled together, and we followed in great footsteps of Andrew Rennie the month before, and went and saw Atlantis, which is the last supposed flight of Atlantis, STS-132, so it was great, yeah.
And you were able to observe the launch from reasonably close up.
We were. Now, Peter Alwood had the benefit of having journalist accreditation, so he was able to see the launch from, in fact, on top of the vertical assembly building. So that's very fortunate. But for Joe Public, we got the best view. That was Michael and I, the best view that the public would get, and we were something like 6 kilometres away from the actual launch site. And surprisingly, at 6 kilometres, you can still see it. And it was just a magic position to be in, and it was a great view.
This was a daytime launch?
It was a daytime launch. It was an afternoon launch. It was about 2 o'clock or thereabouts, and there was something like 300,000 people at the Kennedy Space Center that day. It was, wall-to-wall people and cars, but we had booked a tour beforehand, and we actually had a causeway tour, which brought us to this close proximity to the space shuttle launch. And it was the best thing that we actually did by pre-planning it and organising it that way.
So that's the causeway is one that NASA built, and it goes across the Banana River.
Correct. There are two causeways. One that goes from the mainland, which is the Titusville end, that goes across to Merritt Island. And then there is, and that's across the, it's not the Banana River, I forget the name. And then there is you go across Merritt Island and you go into NASA property, Kennedy Space Center property, properly, and there's another causeway that goes across the Banana River to the Canaveral Space Center, if you like, or the launch area that the Air Force commonly use. And we were basically in the middle of that, and you're looking north to the launch pads, and it just so happens we had two little islands to either side of the launch pad. We positioned ourselves beautifully in the middle of those two islands. As soon as the bus stopped, we raced across to our favourite position and went right up against the rope fence. And we sat there for the next 2.5-3 hours waiting for the launch. But in the meanwhile, the place just got full of people and cars, and we were, had the privilege of actually being right in the front to watch this launch. It was just amazing. Yeah.
And what was the weather like?
The weather was beautiful. It was the typical 90 degrees in Florida, as it was every day that we were there, which is about, I guess, 32 degrees. Humid, the nice 80% humidity. But because we were near the water, it wasn't quite as humid. But visibility was beautiful. There were a few clouds in the sky, not too many. It was hot. There was a nice breeze blowing, and I thought, oh God, this is a strong breeze. Are they really going to launch in this breeze? But it was just no problem for the shuttle, and it was just perfect weather, the perfect weather.
Because the shuttle, even if it does launch, often launches into a cloud or behind cloud, and you don't get to see it.
Well, there was a worry because early in the morning, some of the clouds come across. But by the time the afternoon had come, it had all pretty much cleared up. And I thought, if anything, the wind would stop at launch, because I thought it was strong wind. But the shuttles are pretty accommodating, pretty forgiving machines, as I've now come to learn. But the cloud was not a problem. We thought it would be. It was not an issue. And it was just perfect weather. Perfect weather.
For how long after launch could you see it?
Surprisingly short period of time. I mean, the smoke was obviously there for a little while, but maybe it's because of my interest in it, but I would love to have been a bit longer. It was over very quickly. Within minutes, it was over. And the visibility was such that after separation, it was probably only another minute before we actually lost sight of the shuttle. And I must say, the separation of the solids was a hard thing to see as well. We didn't see it very well. It was so there was a little bit of haziness into the air. It wasn't a perfect launch, because I know yourself, Andrew, you saw the night launch, and it was a very good night that night, and you could see it all the way because it was, you know, it was nighttime. But during the day, we lost it relatively quickly. But the, you know, the smoke hung around for a while, and that was still pretty impressive. Mm. Yeah.
Yes, in fact, in my launch, it was an hour before dawn, and it went up into the sunlight, yeah, high in the stratosphere, and then we saw this massive noctilucent cloud, and it changed colours. Very pretty. How long did the cloud, the shuttle plume, the smoke from the shuttle, last?
Look, to be honest, after the shuttle had launched, you know, we were all sort of in awe of the whole thing, so we didn't really pay too much attention. But I would suggest that it probably, you know, wafted around for maybe 10 minutes after the launch.
And the sound, how loud was it? Did you need hearing protection?
No, you didn't. You didn't. The sound was a surprise to me, because I thought it would be a bit louder, but it's not. But the interesting thing is, we watched the thing, you know, we heard the countdown because it was on all the speakers, because it was a public area. And I had, obviously, the binoculars as trained to it, and so I could see the actual main engine start, and there was an orange flame to the main engines. But you couldn't hear anything, okay? Then you saw these huge plumes of white smoke billowing out, and they basically covered the whole of the launch tower, and you couldn't see anything, and you still didn't really hear that much. Then you started to hear a bit of sound, and as you saw the shuttle popping out of this white cloud, and of course the shuttle, you could see it because its back was towards us, and as soon as it came through the cloud, it started to do its roll maneuver, and what surprised me was the colour of the solid rockets themselves. But the sound was still not really intense at that point. As it slowly moved up, within 30 seconds, you started to hear the sound really increase. And you heard that sort of crackling vibrations of sound, and you could sort of feel it, but it wasn't as loud as I expected, but it was loud enough to make it pretty exciting as it streaked upwards. Yeah,
I think that while it's down low, first of all, you are 6 kilometres away.
Yes,
sound travels at it takes 3 seconds per kilometre, so it would have been 18 seconds after launch before you even heard it. But I think while that sound, initial sound, will be travelling across the wetlands, mm-hmm, and a lot of vegetation there, which would absorb the sound until it apparently was higher in the sky.
Yeah, maybe so. We did have a couple of little islands in front of us. In fact, they were either side of us, so we were in a perfect position. But we had a lot of water, and maybe that's part of the damping effect. But as it cleared, you know, well up into the sky, and as it was 30 seconds in, as I said, probably not a maximum Q at that time, but the rumbling was just really exciting, and it was the crackling. It was just a magnificent sight. And again, the thing that struck me, because no pictures can do it justice, was the colour of the solid rocket boosters. There was this brownish, tannish flame, but just below the nozzles was a beautiful orange colour, in contrast to the shuttle main engines, which were a magnesium white as. Mm. So the coloration and the vibrations of the sound, and watching the shuttle sort of riding itself on its back, you know, heading towards orbit, was just awesome. It was something that I'd never expected. It was something that no pictures or movies, and I've seen a lot of pictures and a lot of film of the shuttle, just never did it justice.
Yes, that's the thing that struck me, of course, even more apparent because it was a night launch, was the incredible intensity of the light from that flame. And of course, it was lighting up the whole district, not that I was watching the district much, but it was so intense, and that really surprised, well, when I think about it, it shouldn't have surprised me, but at the moment I was like, wow, how incredibly bright this is.
Yeah, and that's what shocked me. That's one of the lasting impressions that I've had of that launch, was that brightness, and it's just a magnificent sight, as I said. And you know, by the time solid rocket separation occurs, which is something like 2 minutes into the flight, the sort of the spectacle had already gone, and it was very hard to see the SEP. In the meanwhile, I'm juggling with cameras and video, you know, video cameras and stuff. So whilst I promised myself that I wouldn't do it, I did. I tried to get pictures and tried to get the video. So there was multiple focuses going on, but I should have really just watched the shuttle, because the sensation is, you know, once in a lifetime, and is unforgettable.
You mentioned the solid rocket booster separating. Where do they go after that?
Well, the solid rocket boosters, they land in the Atlantic, and then they basically recover them within 2 days of launch. And we were fortunate enough to actually go and see where they actually bring them into the land, at a place called Port Canaveral, which is, there's a famous park there called Jetty Park, where in the good old days of manned space flight, everyone used to watch or observe the Canaveral launches, Cape Canaveral launches, where the Geminis, of course, went up, the Mercurys, and a lot of the early rocket testing occurred on that site. But we got up early in the morning. There was Michael and Peter and I, and we basically went down to Port Canaveral. We'd heard the news that the shuttle boosters had been recovered by the two ships that they have to do the job, and we've discovered when we got there that one of the boosters had already gone through the lock, because from Port Canaveral they go through a lock into the Banana River, and then they take them up upstream for dismantling and then cleaning up, and then they send them off to Utah for reuse. But we found one booster waiting there to be taken up the lock just adjacent the ship. And there's a good story to that, Andrew, where Peter started to speak to one of the local fishermen and conned the fishermen for a couple of dollars to take us across to the boosters. And he did. And so, you know, we were there in his boat, basically next to a solid rocket booster, which was lying on its side on the ship. And, you know, we got up close, if you like, and that was quite an interesting thing. And once that was over, we actually watched, we raced across to the lock, so got back in our cars, raced up a kilometre to the west of where we were, and saw the ship come through the lock and dragging the solid rocket booster with it. And it was quite fascinating to see that.
Meanwhile, the shuttle was in orbit. How long did it stay up?
The shuttle was about a 2 week mission, as usual, you know, 14 days. And what we did was we saw the launch, we saw the solid rocket boosters, and in between we did, you know, the usual thing of going to the visitor centre and doing the various then and now tours, and that, you know, another story in itself of the things that we saw and did. But after that, we packed our bags and basically headed up to Washington. So whilst the shuttle was in orbit, we were in Washington doing our Washington part of the space trip.
Well, thank you for joining us on the space show.
No problem. Thank you, Andrew.